So the Gemara records a minhag to lain Parsha Zachar right before we go into the celebration of Purim. And the Gemara Maseches Megillah Daf Chav Tes Amud Aleph wonders, what is this all about? Why do we have any relationship between Parsha Zachar and the story of Nes Purim? And the Gemara tells us the reason why is because Mechias Amalek is something that is very relevant in the Purim story. Mechias Amalek basically happened. And in the Purim story, the story of Haman being destroyed and all of those nefarious efforts to destroy the Jewish people, all of that is connected. All of that has a relationship, and therefore, says the Gemara, it would make sense that we should have the Parsha Zachar read every year right before the onset of Purim. Now, the problem about this mitzvah of Zechiras Maisa Amalek is that it's not exactly clear when we're supposed to observe the mitzvah and how many times a year. We know the Torah says, Zachar al tishkach. The Torah says you should remember everything that Amalek did and don't forget. So we do have a concept in Halacha, in Hilchos Avelos, in Yerudea, where we're told that shikcha, that forgetfulness, usually happens after 12 months. Rabbi Kiva Eger writes an interesting comment where he says there are two different minhagim as to when you're supposed to do the Hakamas Matseva. Somebody passes away, so in Eretz Yisrael they have the practice that they do it right away, at the Shloshim or beforehand. Here in America we generally don't do that. So some people do it right before the first yard site, and some people do it right after the first yard site. What is the discrepancy in the minhagim? Rabbi Kiva Eger explains the reason why is because the assumption is that the tzion, that the reason why we put a stone there, why we have a matseva, is that we shouldn't forget, that we should always remember who this person was. So he says within the 12 months, we don't forget. Once 12 months has passed, then there's already a lot of time. So the question is, should we put it there before people forget to make sure they don't? Or do we put it there after the 12 months, once people already have forgotten, and then we are able to remind them? That's where the two minhagim come from. But based on that is where we have this idea, this concept that maybe in a that maybe we should have the obligation once a year, because if we do something once a year, that will make sure that we don't forget about what it is. So there's actually an interesting discussion in the poskim as to whether or not in a shanim uberes, when you have 13 months since the last time you read Parsha Zachar, so what exactly happens? If you're going to tell me that after 12 months most people forget things, then how are we fulfilling the mitzvah in a year like this one? So some achronim say that in a shanim uberes you should have in mind when you read the portion of the Torah in Parshas Ki Tsetse, and you get up to that segment of Zachar Eis Asher Asa Lecha Amalek, you should have in mind in a year like this that that is going to count as your participation in the mitzvah of Zechiras Maisa Amalek. That is what some poskim say. The Chasam Sofer writes that he himself did that. He was machmer on himself, but he says that this is generally not something that we have an obligation to do, because he says what it means is once a year means it's something that we're reminded of seasonally. It's something that we remind ourselves of around the season every year, and that is something that allows us to have this understanding of what Maisa Amalek really was. Now, the question that the Rishonim deal with is, how often do we need to do it? So what's interesting is the Rambam writes in Mitzvah Saseh Kuf Pei Tes, Tzivanu Lizkar Masha Asa Lanu Amalek, we have an obligation to be reminded of what Amalek did, V'shanem Arzeh B'chol Eis Ve'eis, and this has to be an ongoing, constant obligation that we have, that we must always remember this that Amalek did to us. It sounds like the mitzvah is every day. It sounds like we should think about it every morning, every evening, every day, every moment. That is what it seems from the Rambam. However, in other poskim, it doesn't seem that way. The Sefer Achinuch is struggling with this as well. Shelo noda zman chiyuv zeh. He says, I'm not sure exactly how to define when we are supposed to do this mitzvah. And he says, maybe it's pam b'shana, ushnayim, ushalosh. Maybe it's once a year, once every 2 years, or twice a year. The Sefer Achinuch says he's not exactly sure how we're supposed to define the parameters of this mitzvah, which is very interesting because we don't find so many mitzvos that are this hazy, that are this unclear. We know that we have an obligation to keep Shabbos once a week. We know that we have to put on tefillin every morning. We know that you have to do certain things at certain time periods of the year, once, twice a year, whatever it may be. But here, we have a very unusual mitzvah where the defining parameters of that mitzvah are completely unclear. And there's nothing at all that we know about understanding how to observe that mitzvah. Now, there's a general question regarding the observance of all mitzvahs, which becomes very important and very, very relevant when we come to the mitzvah of Zechiras Maisa Amalek. There's a Gemara Maseches Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara writes in Rosh Hashanah that there is a Avua de Shmuel said the following idea, Kafo v'ochol matzah. Let's say you have somebody who is sitting and it's on Pesach night and somebody comes along and shoves the matzah down my throat. Have I been in fulfillment of the mitzvah of eating matzah or not? So what would you say?
Say no.
Why do you say no?
No.
I'm not thinking about it at all. So that's what you're saying. Because I'm not thinking about it, so I shouldn't have the fulfillment. Maybe the mitzvah is just to have an ingestion of matzah, and that's good enough. So the Gemara says, if kafo v'alcha matzah, somebody comes along for whatever reason and shoves matzah down my throat, and I have no idea what I'm doing, why I'm doing, but I eat the matzah. It gets down, and I eat it. Says the Gemara, you're yotzei the mitzvah. Yotzei the mitzvah. Shocking. Then the Gemara says, from that we can infer, hatokea l'shir yatzah. If let's say you have somebody who enjoys playing instruments, and it happens to be Rosh Hashanah, and they happen to be blowing a shofar, but not because they know that there's a mitzvah of tkiyas shofar today, but rather because they enjoy practicing their trumpets. And it so happens that they take a shofar that is kosher for the mitzvah, and they blow whatever sounds they blow, they would be in fulfillment of the mitzvah of shofar. That is what the Gemara says. Now, all of that sounds wonderful until you get to the following. Says the Gemara, when Rab Zeira came to Shul, he went to the Baal Tokei on Rosh Hashanah and he said, Ichavein v'takali. I want you to have in mind that you're going to be motzi me in the mitzvah of tkiyas shofar, and then you should blow the shofar. I asked the Gemara, what do you mean? Why do you have to have in mind? We just said you don't have to have in mind when you're doing a mitzvah. Didn't we just say that eating the matzah by somebody forcing it down my throat or blowing the shofar, not because I know I'm doing the mitzvah, but just because I like to play instruments, I would be yotzei the mitzvah? So how come when Reb Zeira came to Shul, he says to his friend, I want you to have in mind that you're going to be motzi me. This is what we call a stira in the Gemara. The Gemara says this is a contradiction. It's a blatant contradiction. So how do you deal with that? So the Gemara is not sure exactly how to deal with it. The Rishonim have a major discussion. Some Rishonim draw a distinction as follows. When I am doing the mitzvah myself, like eating matzah, like blowing shofar, so then whether I have in mind to do it, whether I don't have in mind to do it, doesn't make a difference. Either way, we assume as long as the mitzvah got done, I am covered. I am safe. I am fine. However, when does Rab Zeira say that we have to have kavana? That is when somebody else is being motzi me in my fulfillment of this mitzvah. And therefore, says the Gemara, when that happens, you need to develop a relationship between the two people. There has to be a yachas. There has to be some kind of connection between them in order for person A to do the mitzvah on behalf of person B. If you're not going to have in mind to be motzi me, then I cannot be shayach. I cannot be included in the mitzvah that you are doing. That is the way some Rishonim explain this discrepancy, this stira in the Gemara. Now, the problem really is, if you back up a step, where does this whole concept even come from? Who said that mitzvahs trichas kavana? Who said that mitzvahs require my mind to be in the right frame of mind? So what's fascinating is the Levush, who was one of the great gedolim in Poland in the 1500s, lived around the same time as the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo, and the Ramah. So they were all writing parallel svarim at the same time, which were very similar to each other. So the Levush writes in his Sefer that he thinks there's a din d'oraisa that we have to have in mind whenever we do a mitzvah in order to fulfill it. Along comes the Prima Gadim, and he says, I love Rabbi Levush, and I respect him very much, but I have no idea where he got that from. Who said, which pasuk in the Torah tells you that you have an obligation to have kavana when you do a mitzvah? Where does it say that anywhere? The Torah says, shake lulav. Torah says, blow the shofar. If you have kavana, it's very nice, but who said you need to have kavana? That may not be the case. And the Prima Gadim says he thinks that there is no source in the Torah itself that points to the fact that there would be any kavana required. B'nai Yisascha writes in a sefer, the B'nai Yisascha was very interesting. He was a great Hasidish Rebbe, Reb Tzvi Elimelech Dinover. So the B'nai Yisaschar is very known for his Hasidish Sefer, but he's less well known for his Sefer in Halacha called Derech Pikudecha, which is a Sefer that goes through halachic topics. He stops in the middle, but whatever we have from him is very valuable. And there, he writes in the introduction to his book, the B'nai Yisaschar writes in his introduction there, that he thinks there are many psukim in the Torah that point to this reality. After all, he says, don't we say every day, you have to serve Hashem v'chal levavcha v'chal nafshecha v'chal miyodecha? What does it mean that I have to serve Hashem with my whole heart? How do you serve Hashem with your heart? My obligation is to serve Hashem with my hands, with my feet. So what does it mean to serve Hashem with my heart? So says the Menei Yisaschar, it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of me machshava and maisa. The Ribono Shel Olam wants me not only to do something, but he wants me to understand what it is that I'm doing. He wants me to think about it, and he wants me to pay attention to what I'm doing. And if I don't pay attention, it is not considered to be a mitzvah at all. It's just, I'm living life like everybody else, and I happen to do the things that I enjoy, and I don't do the things I don't enjoy. So that's not mitzvah observance at all. You have to have specific intent for all the different things, for all the different opportunities that present themselves in your lifetime. What's fascinating about this is the Bnei Yisachar then takes it one step further. And the Bnei Yisachar writes, what would be the halacha? When you're talking about, let's say, eating matzah, so maybe that's where we say you have to have kavana. When you're talking about blowing the shofar, that's when we say maybe you have to have kavana. But when we talk about, let's say, the violation of a losaseh, so for example, let's say for the entire duration of Pesach, I don't eat any chametz. But not because I know it's Pesach, but rather because I just hate eating cakes and cookies. I don't like doing that. So would I have the schar for the mitzvah of not eating chametz over the duration of Pesach when I actually had no intention at all to fulfill that mitzvah? But in the end of the day, I did. Or for example, he writes, what if a person, we know that there are certain, a man is not allowed to shave certain areas on his face, on his beard, right, with a razor. So what if I'm simply not thinking about that at all, but when I go to the barber, they don't use a razor, and they happen to skip over certain areas, and it turns out that I didn't violate the losaseh. So do I get credit for that, or do you say, no, you only get credit if you actually know what you're doing, if you're thinking, and you're deliberately doing or not doing something, but just being, just living, doesn't give you any credit. That's what?
Murder.
What about murder?
I'm not killing everybody.
Right, so do you get schar every second because it says lo sirtzach in the Torah and you didn't kill anybody? It sounds very strange. It sounds very uncomfortable to say such a thing. So he suggests that he thinks the only way to fulfill a lo saseh is if I have intent not to do something, meaning I have an urge to do something, and then I say, oh, there's a lo saseh in the Torah that says, please do not do this, and that is why I stay away from doing that. So then I get schar, but outside of that, how can it be? That doesn't make any sense. So he says that that's where he understands the idea of mitzvah shrichas kavana. It goes in both directions, both by fulfilling a positive commandment as well as by abstaining from a negative commandment. Our obligation would be not only to do the mitzvah or to abstain from doing an avera, but also to have in mind, to understand what it is that we're doing. And he proves it. He says, because the psukim say throughout Chumash, we have an obligation to serve Hashem with our lev, with our neshama. What does that mean? It means you should understand what it is that you're doing. You should appreciate the experience that you have. Yeah?
How do we hold with regard to Haseba? Are you yosei the mitzvah if you didn't lean by eating matzah?
Usually we assume not. You have to do it again.
So my follow-up question then would be, so it would then seem logical that if you shoved the matzah down my throat, if I had to be leaning in order to be carrying the mitzvah?
Nah, I'm laying down on a bed. Come up with a case, right?
That I have to be the one doing leaning. If that's a ma'ake.
No, that's a side point. That's a side point. But now we come back to the Gemara. So again, the Gemara makes a first opening statement, Kafova ocho matzah. If you shove matzah down someone's throat, they're yotzi the mitzvah. Then the Gemara comes the very next line and says, oh, but when Rav Zeira went to shul on Rosh Hashanah, he told about Tokea, make sure to have me in mind. So what's going on? How do you deal with that? So the Rishonim are not sure exactly, as we mentioned, how to deal with it. Some Rishonim say that maybe this is a machlokus between the two opinions in the Gemara. One opinion in the Gemara is that you don't need to have kavana whenever you fulfill a mitzvah. The other opinion in the Gemara is, no, you absolutely need to have kavana. Without having intent, without having kavana, you are not in fulfillment. And that is why Rav Zeira came to shul, and he said the Baal Tokea needs to be motzi me. So this is a big, big discussion in the Rishonim exactly how to deal with this, which trickles down into a machlokas in the Shulchan Aruch. Now, that's very uncomfortable. When you have a machlokas in the Shulchan Aruch is supposed to be the bottom line, the last word. Here, the Shulchan Aruch writes, some opinions say that when you do a mitzvah, you have to have kavana. Some opinions say when you do a mitzvah, you don't have to have kavana. So what am I supposed to do? So that's very uncomfortable. When the Shulchan Aruch does that and he quotes both opinions, it's hard to figure out, well, which one is he emphasizing? So there are rules. When he says this one first, that one first, what exactly does he mean? Does he mean to emphasize this or that? That is a big discussion in the postgame, how to figure out exactly what the Shulchan Aruch means. Parenthetically, just an amazing point. I mentioned it somewhere in one of my shiurim, I don't remember where, recently. But this past Shabbos was the yahrzeit of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. And just to show the godless of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, you know, Rabbi Yaakov was known in many of our communities as a person of tremendous seichel, as a person of great understanding and human compassion. That's what he was known for. But he was also a tremendous Rosh Hashiva and unbelievable Talmud Chacham. So to prove that point, listen to the following thing that he writes in his Sefer. Amazing. It has nothing to do with our shir, but it's just an amazing point. It shows the mastery of learning Shulchan Aruch, of someone who really understands it. So there is a discussion in Hilchos Shabbos about the laws of Tofer. Tofer means you're not allowed to take a needle and thread and sew, stitch together two different items of clothing. Okay, so that's the halacha. What is the status of somebody who takes a pin and puts it in between two articles of clothing, and then I pin the two articles of clothing together by using a safety pin? Is that considered tofer? Is that considered stitching or not? So the simple understanding is, of course not, because stitching means I intend for it to be there for a long time, and it's going to stay. Here, a safety pin, I put it in, I'm going to take it out, and you keep doing that. It's not supposed to be the same as a button. Why would a button be any different? So there's an opinion of the Karban Nisanel. Karban Nisanel is the pirush on the bottom of the Rush and the back of the Gemara. So the Karban Nisanel writes that he was very upset. He lived in Prague. He was very upset that the women in Prague used to use safety pins on Shabbos, and this is a chilul Shabbos, and it's a terrible thing, and he's very upset about it. Okay. That opinion is quoted in the Mishnah Brura. Mishnah Brura writes, the Karban Nisanel says that he was upset that people use safety pins on Shabbos because this is a violation of the Melach of Tofer. Now, many of the poskim disagree with the Karban Nisanel. They say, what do you mean? What's wrong with the safety pin? That's the same as a button. There's nothing wrong with that at all. Okay. The Mishnah Brura quotes it. When you read that Mishnah Brura, what do you think it means? New Rebbe Shraiva, what does it mean? And it's not a trick question. Sharon, what do you say? When you read the Mishnah Brura, and he says, the Karban Nisanel writes that if you use a safety pin on Shabbos, that is a terrible violation of a Malacha of Tofer. What does that mean? The Mishnah Brura is saying, he agrees with him. That's what I understood when I read the Mishnah Brura. Otherwise, why does he quote him? Along comes Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, and he says, no. If you are a careful studier of the Mishnah Brura, you would know that that's not the case. Why? Because he said the Mishnah Brura never gives attribution in the paragraph itself in the Mishnah Brura, never says who he's quoting. On the bottom, he has footnotes where he tells you where he got it from. In the paragraph itself, he never quotes. Here is an exception where he quotes the person, one of the rare exceptions in the Mishnah Brura, where he quotes the person who he's saying this in the name of in the paragraph itself. And Rabbi Yaakov said the style of the Mishnah Brura is such that if he quotes the person's name in the paragraph on top of the page, that means he doesn't agree with him. All he's telling you is you cannot go through this entire sugya without knowing this comment of the Karban Nisanel. I happen not to agree with him, but that's what he says. Can you imagine what a mastery of Mishnah Brura you have to know that? How did he know that? To understand that the style of the Mishnah Brura is such that if he quotes somebody by name, then we know he doesn't hold like him? Like that to me is absolutely fascinating, amazingly fascinating. But okay, back to our discussion here. So when you decipher the words of the Shulchan Aruch, sometimes my father likes to say, boys come to him in YU and they say, we're about to start learning halacha, what should we learn? And he says, it may not be the best idea to start with the Mishnah Brura. It's very hard. You learn through the Shulchan Aruch and you're confused. You look on the bottom of the page thinking you're going to get a little bit more of a clarity, and you start reading the Mishnah Brura and you realize, now I'm even more confused. He quotes 100 different opinions, and then he tells me all the different permutations and all the different conditions, and maybe it applies here, maybe that, like, this is not the place to start. If you want to learn halacha carefully, this is not the place to begin. You should start with the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, which just lays it out very clearly. Then you go into a little bit more depth. You learn the Chayei Adam, then you go into the Mishnah Brura, and you have a greater understanding of the whole sugya. So here, when you look at the Shulchan Aruch by Mitzvah Tzrichas Kavana, you come across a problem. The Shulchan Aruch says, some opinions say you have to have Kavana when you do a mitzvah. Some opinions say you don't. So the bottom line is, what are we supposed to do? The answer is, we generally follow the compromise opinion, which is quoted in the Magen Avraham, in the name of the Radvaz. The Magen Avraham quotes in the name of the Radvaz. The Mishnah Brura writes the same thing. I think it's in Siman Ayin, don't remember, but the Mishnah Brura quotes this as well, that we generally assume we differentiate. If you're doing a mitzvah mid'oraisa, you have to have kavana when you're doing it. If you're only fulfilling a mitzvah mid'rabbanan, so it doesn't matter so much if you're going to forget the kavana that you're supposed to have at the moment of the fulfillment of the mitzvah. So say, for example, if I'm blowing the shofar, says the Gemara, I have to have in mind, and the other person being motzi me in the mitzvah also has to have in mind. If I'm just doing the mitzvah of lighting Hanukkah candles, so if I don't really understand what I'm doing and I'm not thinking about it, I'm just lighting candles in my house, and it turns out it's the first night of Hanukkah, then we would say that you're yotzi the mitzvah anyway. It's because of that we have the practice in many of our shuls that before we read Parsha Zachar, the Gabbai will make an announcement and say, everyone should have in mind that we're going to be Mekayim the mitzvah of Parsha Zachar, of Zachar is Asher HaSalach HaMalik. Why do we do that? The reason we do that is because we assume that reading Parsha Zachar is a mitzvah mid'oraisa, and because it's d'oraisa, we go back to that original rule. We go back to the rule which states that when you're doing a mitzvah d'oraisa, you have to have specific intent to fulfill that mitzvah, and without that, you will not be able to be yotze. Yeah.
What does it do with the matzah piece? Because that's at the rice also.
Yeah, he says it's a machlokus in the Gemara.
So he would say that in that Gemara, the Gemara. So he's
positing. The Rishonim say that it's a steer in the Gemara. Okay. One opinion in the Gemara is if you eat matzah by force, you yotze the mitzvah. That's because they believe you never have to have kavanah for any mitzvah. But the opposing position is that when he came to shul, he needed to blow the shofar and have in mind. The reason for that is because you always have to have in mind. And that's two different opinions in the Gemara, and we accept one and we reject the other.
It doesn't reconcile.
Yeah, that's the way he explains it. Now, other Rishonim explain the Gemara differently, but that's the way the Shulchan Aruch seems to quote that.
And that's the reason for Hinni Muchan.
Correct. That's where Hinni Muchan Mazuma comes from, that a person should put themselves in the frame of mind and say explicitly that I want to do the mitzvah that I'm expected to be doing in order that it should be considered that I'm doing the mitzvah with kavanah. Yes, correct. There is a question whether or not you need a minyan for the mitzvah of Kriyas Parshas Zachar. So the Gemara has, in Maseches Gittin Daf Lamed Ches, the Gemara is a very interesting story. It's also in Brachos Daf Mem Zayin, where the Gemara tells us that there is a prohibition of freeing a slave. Now, as we know, we don't have an institution of slavery today, but in the times of the Chumash and the times of the Gemara, there was such a thing as an Eved Kanani. And the Gemara says that La'olam behem ta'avodu, once you have the slave and he belongs to you, you have to keep him forever. You're never allowed to let him go free. That's the halacha. So the question that the Gemara raises is Ma'aseh Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe Elazar came into shul and shichur avdo v'hishlima la'asara. The Gemara says he freed his slave in order to allow that slave to count toward the minyan. If the slave would be free, he would be a full-fledged Yisrael and he would be able to count as a minyan. So he freed his slave, and by doing so, he then was able to count him toward the 10th man for the minyan. So the Rush asks, how is he allowed to violate the Isser of freeing a slave? What was the heter for him to do that? So the Rush writes, the answer is because you have to weigh out the options. Here we have 9 people, which is a rabbim, waiting for a minyan. We need a 10th man. The only way to get a 10th man is if I'm going to violate my own private Isser. So I'm allowed to violate an Isser of La'olam Behem Ta'avodah, which is my personal problem, in order to help the greater tzibur that is together here, all the other 9 people who are together. That's the way the Rush explains it. Then the Rush says, and probably he was doing it because, or the Rush says, maybe he was doing it because they had to read Parsha Zachar, and Parsha Zachar is Daraisa. Ooh, really, reading Parsha Zachar is Daraisa? Yeah, that's true that reading Parsha Zachar is Daraisa, but reading Parsha Zachar with a minion is Daraisa? Is that true? So what happens if you can't come to shul this week, and you happen to have a Sefer Torah in your house? We're all supposed to have a Torah in our house. Not everybody has one, right? Let's say I have a Sefer Torah in my house. I can't make the shul. I have to make sure to get a minyan in my house to read Parsha Zachar. This is a major discussion. The Trumas Hadeshen writes the following. Trumas Hadeshen talks about a scenario. It's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, where he says, let's say you have a community that does not have a lot of people in the community itself that have the ability to read from a Sefer Torah or from a Megillah. They always have to go somewhere else for Purim. But you can't expect people to travel too many times. I have one chance at traveling away for something. Either I'm going to leave for Parsha Zachar, or I'm going to leave for Purim night for Mikra Megillah. Which one should I do? That's the question of the Trumas Hadeshen. Now, for us, we don't really understand the question so much, because just get a Bal Korei and have someone come to town, and it'll be fine. It wasn't the Metzias. It didn't work that way. They didn't have people traveling so easily back and forth. So Trumas Hadeshen describes this scenario where a person is stuck and they have to make a decision. Am I going to travel in for Parsha Zachar, or am I going to travel in for the reading of the Megillah? That's the question.
Zachar doesn't have to be on Shabbos, does it?
Oh, so you're saying, why don't we just read Parsha Zachar with the Megillah? That would be the easiest solution. So he writes that if you have people who don't have a minyan in their place, and they want to go to the other location in order to be able to hear something, so he says they should go hear Parsha Zachar, and that will be better than reading the Megillah. Why? Because Parsha Zachar with a minyan is Daraisa. Really? Parsha Zachar with a minyan is Daraisa? I would have said Parsha Zachar is Midaraisa. You don't have to have a minyan. So we all need to go and schlep to the other community because we need a minyan for Parsha Zachar. Is that true? If we don't have a minyan in town, we'll just go to shul on Shabbos and we'll read from the Torah anyway, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Parsha Zachar. So this is a big question. Now, I like your question. Why don't they just push off Parsha Zachar to read it together on Purim with the Megillah? Now, the truth is, the Kriyas HaTorah on Purim is not Parsha Zachar, but it is the story of Amalek. And that is a major, major question in the Magen Avraham. Should we assume that if you don't hear Parsha Zachar on Shabbos, you can be Yotzei the Mitzvah by going to Shul and hearing the Mikra, the Kriyas HaTorah on Purim itself. After all, Parsha Zachar is from Parshas Kiseitzei at the very end of Sefer Devarim. When we read the Kriyas HaTorah on Purim itself, where are we reading from? Parshas B'Shalach. So aren't they the same? The answer is not exactly the same. Not exactly the same, because in Parshas B'Shalach, it just tells the story. Vayamo Amalek vayilachem im Yisrael berefidim. It says that the Jewish people were attacked by Amalek, and they responded. It doesn't talk about the mitzvah of Zachar es asher asalacha Amalek. And that's the question. Can you be yotzei the mitzvah Parshas Zachar just by reading the story of the fight with Amalek without getting into the details of our obligation to remember it? That is the question that the Magen Avraham raises. And that is something that the Mishneh Berurah challenges, where he says, I don't understand, how can the Magen Avraham say that anybody who missed Kriyas HaTorah on Shabbos Parsha Zachar is able to go to Shul and make it up on Purim? It's not the same story. It's not the same thing. So that would be something that perhaps would not work. That is the big question. Another major question that the Poskim raise is, what is the nature of the obligation of women when it comes to Parsha Zachar? This too is very unclear. There's a very famous comment of the Sefer Achinuch in Mitzvah Tuf Reish Gimel, where the Sefer Achinuch says, women do not have an obligation to read Parsha Zachar. Why should women not have an obligation to read Parsha Zachar? It is not limited. It's not a Zman Grama. It's not limited to a specific time in the year. It says, just don't forget. So if it's don't forget, then it's don't forget whenever that is. So why should women not have an obligation? So the Sefer Achinuch comes up with a whopper of a Chiddush, and he says, the reason why is because what do we read about when we say the story of Zachar? When we say the story of Amalek, it's about our waging war against evil. Now, do women have an obligation to go be part of the Jewish army and fight in the war? The answer is no. Al pi halacha, they don't have to. And therefore, he says, since it's not a woman's obligation to be a soldier, therefore she doesn't have to remind herself of the story of Amalek, because it's not relevant to her. If you're never going to serve in the army anyway, then why do you have to talk about the rules of what we're supposed to do in that army? And therefore, he says, that is why, in his opinion, he thinks a woman would not have an obligation. The Minchas Chinuch jumps on the Sefer Achinuch, as he often does, and he says, I don't understand. Why should these two factors be codependent? Why should one have anything to do with the other? The Torah says, as an independent statement, Zachar eis asher asalacha Amalek. Every Jew has an obligation to remember what Amalek did to us as a nation. What does it matter if you have a part in the actual fight with the army or not? What does it have to do with anything? We have an obligation to remember the story of Amalek, v'zehu, and that's it. So the Sefer Achinuch writes his opinion, and the Minchas Chinuch disagrees. And this is a big, big question in the Achronim. Should we assume that women have an obligation? Now, if it's easy for a woman to go to shul, then go to shul. What's the big deal? Go to shul and listen to the story of Amalek. But it's not always so easy for women to get out to shul. So how much do they need to trouble themselves to actually go and hear the Kriyas HaTorah of Zachar when it's going to be very difficult for them, either because they're not feeling well, they're wheelchair bound, or they're taking care of young children and it's not so easy to get out of the house, whatever it might be? How much should a woman feel the need to push herself to go hear the story of Amalek? It's not clear how far that should go. There are different opinions in the poskim as to that. There are many shuls that actually have a mikra of Parsha Zachar that is going to be later on, in order that all the women who weren't able to make it to shul at the time in the morning are going to be able to participate later on. And that too opens up a whole Pandora's box. Should we be taking out Sifrei Torah when there's not a minyan laning? Are we allowed to do that just for Parsha Zachar? Yes or no? This is a whole major discussion. I do remember there are many great Gedolim who say that women do not have an obligation, following in line of what the opinion of the Sefer Achinuch is. And if a woman doesn't feel comfortable going to shul for whatever reason, so she doesn't have to go to shul, it's okay. She's not obligated to do it. But of course, all things being equal, any woman who has the opportunity to go to shul and who is comfortable enough going to shul, those women certainly should try, because many of the Rishonim say that this mitzvah applies both to men and to women alike, because there's no reason why we should say that women should be absolved from this obligation. After all, there's no clear basis to really assume such a thing. So that is the major controversy. That's the major question. But again, as we said, anyone who doesn't have that struggle, anyone who doesn't have that problem, should certainly go ahead and try to make it to shul for Parsha Zachar.